Yeah, yeah, yeah. You got to get a people what they want. Boy, it's your boy Kingpin in this chair feeling great with my boy Big Drake. Big Drake, what's up with your boy?
We back, baby. We back. Y'all don't care for nothing. But your boys are the Made Men Ready Show. In fact, we're feeling great. We've been blessed. And it just feels good, for one, to talk to my friend Kingpin. And two, it's football season. And
boy,
back for our Made Men family.
Hide your wife, hide your kids.
Yes, sir. Come on, the Made Men Ready Show is back in full effect. And hey, we going to try our best, our very best, to make sure you guys get a show weekly. Not just sporadically here and there every now and again. It's been 3 months, it's been 2 months. We've been busy. We're going to do a little recap.
That's right.
Going on in our lives so you can understand how busy we are. But we going to try our very best to make sure the Made Men family stays connected.
Trying to get the people what they want, man. Bro, but I tell you, Big Drake, I look back, I literally, it's been well over a year, maybe even a year and a half. And even the last time we taped, it was just a sporadic one show and we dropped it. To have our fans, I don't know about you, but I've gotten several text messages asking me, hey, man, what a show at, man? Y'all still doing the show? You going to do the show? So to know that the fans and our family out there, man, want that real talk and can remember, even though we missed the whole football season. We missed all of last year, bro.
Yes.
We missed the entire football season. But to know, and I want the family to know, man, bro, I missed a part of me while doing football last year, because literally after every game, like, man, we need to tape. I need to talk about this to somebody.
Well, we're back, baby.
We're back, baby.
We got it on and popping. Hey, you got to start somewhere.
Yeah.
Sometimes you slip and fall. But like Donovan Kirkland say in his song, we fall down. But we get back up.
Some days it takes longer than others to get back up. But getting back up is the part of this all, man. But dude,
it has taken us a year and a half to get back.
That's right.
But you know, we've been talking about this for a while, so we just didn't lay flat on our back. We sat up, then we rolled over on our knees.
That's right.
Then we actually came up on the knees.
That's right. One knee.
Now we starting to stand up on both our legs.
Had a couple scheduled dates trying to jump out. It just never worked out, man.
But like
you say, you know, making sure the people know. Now, we weren't just sitting down. I mean, it has been one heck of a ride the last year and a half, man. Big Drake, both of us, right now, we both got the coaching thing. You coaching real ball. I'm coaching coaching Little League again. Zach is on the field this year.
Coaching is coaching, baby.
Man, and I love it, dude. But you know, the area I live in, Big Drake, and I'm gonna try not to get us put off the air on the first show. But you know, the area I live in, it's a little different.
Like the front side of your hand or your back side of your hand.
That's correct. Absolutely. So.
Okay.
We moved here to Joy Wynn Augusta, and we do live in an area, man, that you know can tend to be probably what some would call. I'll preface like this, because it's not always just about the front or the back, but the fact of the mindset. So I live around folks that probably tend to be a little entitled. And so, man, coaching little kids that got grown parents that's really feel entitled, you know how their kids be.
So,
I've had to catch myself numerous times on the field, and I'm sure some of them have been very nervous because I don't catch myself with my son, and so I will quickly reach and snatch Jack's face mask, and I have to look around and be like, he mine, and then I keep on going.
Yeah, belongs to me.
Don't call the cops. This one's mine right here. So,
yeah.
So, Big Drake, man. Tell the folks, man. You how is the last time we talked? You were handing up defensive lines for. Let's see. This was before the Chiefs, even. I think the last time we talked.
Yeah. I'm just gonna go ahead and give a. I say quick, but it's not gonna be quick. So I'm just gonna give the listeners a little rundown of what's been going on. Well, first and foremost, because it's been so long since I've been on the radio, I want to make the announcement that my beautiful wife, Erica, is pregnant, and we are expecting our first child, which is a boy. I got a little Dre coming through. Oh, and I wouldn't say little. He's probably gonna be a big question.
That's right. Ain't no little in your body ever.
Yeah, he is due December 20th. We're really excited. And the last time we had an ultrasound, which has been a couple weeks ago, and at that particular time, the doctor said, well, we're about to weigh him. He should at least weigh 12 ounces. When they weighed him, he was a full pound. And I say, whoa, he's 2 weeks ahead of schedule. He's going to continue to grow. So you can throw December 20th out the window.
Yes, sir.
Then, as he's starting to, you know, look at his feet and look at his legs, he said, this is the doctor's exact words. Oh, my God, those are the biggest feet I've ever seen. So he's going to be big. And, you know, anybody that knows me knows I love kids.
Yeah, bro.
Kids are up there with cookies and Jesus.
That's right. I was going to say, that's not many things higher in your life.
Yeah, I love kids, so I'm just ecstatic. I do have two other kids, and that's Kingpin's kids. I consider them my boys, too, but, you know, it just makes me feel good to be able to have somebody that's going to carry my name. So I'm excited about that.
Yeah, man, I'm super excited about that, too, dude. That when you text me, you know, first of all, I got to tell the folks, let me tell y'all,
okay.
Big Drake ticked me off. He going to text me talking about you going to be an uncle. I'm like, I look at the phone, and I'm like, did this dude really just text me something like that? Like, it's like, that is not something you text somebody. You call me and tell me stuff like that, dog.
Hey, that's the way I like to do it, baby.
But, dude, I'm so excited for y'all, man. Y'all going to make absolutely amazing parents. Adding another rung to the Drake lineage is definitely a thing of beauty, man. So we are grooming the next national championship class at Auburn University.
Yes, sir.
As well as the next Lions of Phi Beta Sigma fraternity. I mean, the Kappas and the Qs brainwashing. We brainwashing from the start, baby. Bleep by you, dude.
You know. But besides that, my career, of course, everybody knows I'm still a detective, but I do want to share with everybody that I am trying my best to transition into coaching full time. I really believe that the Lord has taken me into this, and this I believe that you can have a ministry and you can reach people, but it doesn't always have to come from the pulpit.
That's right.
And
He's called us in various fields of work.
Yes, and just my connection that I've had with my players on each level, the semi-pro level, the high school level, it fills me with joy, and it truly has become my passion. So in saying that, everybody knows that I was coaching a semi-professional team a couple years ago called the East Alabama Predators. We went 12-1 from there. And I will tell you this, when you're doing your passion and what you truly love and what's in your heart, you do it for free.
You never work a day in your life.
Yes, and when you, if it's truly in your heart, it's your passion, people are going to seek you for it. And that also lets me know, it's confirmation to me, that this is God's plan. It's not me. It's all God.
That's right.
So from there, mid-season, I get a call from this guy. Don't know who he is. Never met him. He's the head coach at a small private school, high school, called Lyman Ward Military Academy. And I kid you not, this dude actually starts to recruit me. And I've never coached high school ball before. Well, you know, before I coached the East Alabama Predators, I did not realize I enjoyed coaching as much as I did.
Yeah.
And just to give you a quick background on that, one of my coworkers, he helped kind of form the team, and he knew I played ball at Auburn. He was Man, every day he was begging me to come out there and play. I'm like, dude, I'm not playing no football. I'm not.
It's a wrap.
I mean, that's the last thing. I am not playing. And, you know, for people who have seen me lately, especially my frat brothers, my LVs out there, you know, I'm not defensive inside no more.
You right tackle.
Tackle side.
You right tackle.
Yeah, so I'm mean, so he was like, man, now he's a big guy too. He played offensive guard at East Carolina. So I mean, he's a pretty big guy.
Yeah.
He's like, man, come on, man, you tackle. I'm at the guard. I said, that's my point. That's why I'm not playing. I'll play defensive end. He said, really? I'm saying, see, that's why I don't want to play right there. That's why I'm like, how to think I'm so he still begs me nonstop. So I say, look, man, I'll come out and I'll help. Whatever you guys want me to do, I'll help coach up, bring guys water. I don't care. I'll help. It'll be good to get back into football. So I get out there my first day there. The linebacker coach, for whatever reason, you know, it's semi-pro, but we like to call it professional development, because semi-pro has a negative connotation to it, and we're trying to really run this program as professionally as we can. So that guy didn't show up. The defensive line coach linebackers, I coach D-line. After that first day, the head coach was like, man, I watched it. You know what you're talking about? I'm going to fire the linebackers coach, the D-line coach, don't coach linebackers. I want you to coach the D-line. So, I mean, that's how my coaching career got started. I said, not a problem. So from there, the guy at Lyman Ward, he'd been to a couple games. He actually knew one of my players, talked to one of my players about me. And my player was like, you know, I played college ball, but Coach Drake has taught me more than I've ever known about D-line.
Right.
And so he offered me a job. He recruited me. I'm like, look, I work. I don't get off till 5. He's like, it's a military school. These kids are boarded here. They don't leave.
We'll can't go whenever nowhere. Time you need us to.
We'll just start practice when you get there. So, I mean, lo and behold, that's what we did. Now, you can't have a testimony without a test.
Yes.
This was my test. So, I get there. Of course, things are starting to go smoothly to begin with, because, you know, it's not a thing where I start coaching and we play a game the next week. You know, we won't play a game for a month and a half, too much. Got to get everything ready. Got to have a little camp. Well, to keep a long story short, I'm just going to say that coach, his name is Leon Day. I will say his name. Anybody that knows me, keep paying, you know, I'm very positive and I don't never talk bad about anybody I want to uplift. Leon Day is the worst human being I've ever met in my life. Okay? The worst human being. And he keep paying, you know me. Anybody else that knows me, you know, I don't talk about people. I met a mutual friend that I played. I'm not going to spill out his names, but a mutual friend that I played ball with, who is a college coach now. I was talking to him. He said, aren't you coaching high school ball? I said, yes, I'm at Lyman Ward. He said, yeah, what do you think about Leon Day? Nah, I don't. This could be Leon's day best friend. You know, it's literally been like 10 years since I've seen this person. I know him, but it's been 10 years. And the same reason I said, well, I said, well, I almost said the person's name. Like, well, I'm going to say, person, you know me. I'm honest. You know, I just like to give it like it is.
Yeah, yeah.
I said, he could be your best friend. But Leon Day is the absolute worst person I've ever met in my entire life. He said, yep. Yeah. So, So I started my career going 12-1. I started off my high school career going 0-10.
working with the worst person in the world.
Yeah, it wasn't the kid. I will say it was not the kid. And people have this misconception, oh, it's, you know, it's Lyman Ward, it's the military academy, it's, you know, it's a school with all bad kids. No. Now, it is a military academy.
Right.
And that place needs to be burned down. I wouldn't send my worst enemy's child there. That's a hard place.
That's crazy, man.
But it's all rich kids. Ricky Smiley. So I got a picture with me, Ricky Smiley, and Ricky Smiley's son. I got a picture with Ricky Smiley, his son, and the president, and Michelle Obama. So, I mean, the founder of Sprint, his son go there. I mean, it's all rich kids that may have gotten caught smoking weed once, And you know what, rich parents, because they're not involved in their kids' lives anyway, oh, you're just out of control, you're the worst kid ever, so they ship them off.
I can't deal with you. I can't deal with you.
Yeah, yeah, it's just horrible. But anyway.
My son keep on his path. He had Neto. He keep trying me. He heading there, I'm telling you.
No, he can live with me. Don't do it. I mean, don't do it, man. Don't do it. Just that bad, man. Y'all look up Lima Ward. Google Lima Ward Military Academy in Camp Hill and read some of the stories that's out there. And I will say all of it's true.
Wow.
Okay, no, I'm going on. Bear with me. Okay, so from there, the defensive coordinator that was at the Predators after, the Predator season ended, after the high school season ended, he started another semi-professional team called the Opa-locka Chiefs. He wanted me to be the D-line coach there, and he named me assistant head coach. Well, also, while this is going on, of course, the worst person in the world, he gets fired because he's the worst person in the world.
Right.
The defensive coordinator, he then becomes the head coach, but he hires me as the defensive coordinator and the assistant head coach. Great. Things are going fine.
Moving.
The Opa-locka Chiefs season start off. We go undefeated, 8-0. And just to keep another long story short, we got the week before the championship game, which we were in, the commissioner kicked us out the league. So we didn't get a chance to play for the league championship. That's another story. We'll get in another time.
So, you told me that one. I couldn't believe that.
Yeah, so that happened. Then, which is a totally another story that I have to tell you about at another time, the head coach at Lima Ward, they pretty much tell him that at the end of your contract, we're not going to hire you. We're not going to renew your contract. Basically, firing him. So he technically was the head coach. I technically was the defensive coordinator, but other than a little spring practice, we really didn't coach no ball for a season because he was going to lose his job. But I'm like, okay, you know, the Chiefs stuff is dwindling because it's a spring league. I got to stay coaching. One thing my brother taught me is, you know, if you want to be a coach and get hired, you got to continuously coach so people can see on your resume he's been coaching since he started.
That's right. That you ain't never stopped. Or ain't nobody never not wanted you.
Yes. So I started working football camps. And I told Kingpin this story. I mean, there was a month where I may have spent 2 days at my house. Camps at Alabama State. In Alabama State, since it's a small school, they have a lot of satellite camps. So I was driving down to Dothan, Birmingham, Mobile. Yeah, I spent 4 or 5 days at Mississippi State.
You was grinding this summer.
All this summer, I went down to Tulane. I did camps at Auburn. And during one of those camps, I ran into another one of my former players who was the defensive coordinator at a high school here locally at Beauregard High School. The first time I ran into him, I said, hey, you know, I'm the D coordinator. He's like, I'm the D coordinator too. We start, you know, talking to him or whatever. Well, by the time the next camp rolls around, I talked to him again, which is the next camp was like a month later. And I'm like, well, this is what's going on. He's like, well, man, I mean, I'd love to have you with me. And I said, okay. So I am now coaching outside linebackers and tight ends at Beauregard High School here in Lee County, Alabama, and we are currently 2-0. Won our first game 42-7. We won our second game 68-33. Things are going well. We got some real good guys, real good prospects, and things are, just to share with the Maidman family, things are looking very promising for me in the near future to possibly obtain an entry-level college job so I can get out of law enforcement. Because everybody's been reading the papers and seeing the news. Law enforcement is not the career to go in, to be in right now.
No. So. You know, and I probably wasn't going to try to get into that tonight, because that hole is probably deeper than we.
Yeah.
That's not an out-the-back kind of hole, but bro, I've been, and you know, it's funny in all these discussions, you know, I've sounded like, you know, people look at me funny like, like, what kind of dude are you? Why are you defending? And it's like, I'm like, well, my best friend is in law enforcement, so I do have a little different view. And yeah, then something else happened. And then something else happened. Like, all right, okay, y'all right. That's the, you know, okay. I don't like him no more either. All right, that's right. The truth comes out. The reason why we have a tape is I no longer like Big Drake because I realize I don't like cops. So.
And this sounds crazy. And I watch you. I make this comment too. Hey, y'all, my main man, fam.
Yes, sir.
I tell you, quick, I don't like cops.
Right.
I mean, you know me better than anybody knows me. What cop do I hang around outside of work?
None.
None. I don't like cops.
Nope. None at all.
So I totally get it. But you know, to go back for about one quick second, I had a couple people surprise me. During football season. For one, Kingpin showed up to a Predators game out of the blue. And I know during that time, I talked about it on the radio, Ron Green, he showed up to a couple games. He actually showed up to a Chiefs game as well. And one of our avid listeners, Mario showed up to a game out in Birmingham.
Big old kid to a game?
Yeah. He only could say for a halftime, he said, hey, I just wanted to come and support you, man. And he brought a smile to my face. So, Mario, man, I appreciate that.
Big ups to you, Big O. Big O is one of the listeners that texted us and said, hey, man, where the show at?
Yeah, no doubt.
Like every year, last year, same time, hey, man, y'all going to tape again?
Yes. So, shout out to Mario. Hey, Mario, we are going to have you on this show.
Yes, sir.
Been missing, maybe not next week, but we're gonna have you here real soon. Let us get back in the groove of things. And if you were gracious with your presence,
yes,
it's gonna be on the pocket.
Hey, I'll tell you what, that dude, that's one funny dude though.
Hilarious.
He makes little comments like out the side of his mouth.
Yeah, I wish I could tell some stories right now. But then we would need to be on XM Radio.
That's right. Late at night. So.
Yeah.
And the Humidor, one of the games I showed up to, the Humidors came.
Yes, Jeffrey.
Yeah.
Jeffrey Wright. Big shout out to Jeffrey Wright. And you know what? I'm going to shout out my brother in law, Chris Eldridge Jr. He has been on me nonstop. Like, dude, I need it. Like, I got to have this football season. Something ain't right. I can't go on with my life. I need him. So, hey, man, I appreciate the support. This one's for you, Chris. This one's for you, buddy. This one's for you,
Chris.
Bill.
Pickle.
Yes. So, King Chris.
Yes, sir.
Now that I've taken up the whole show, tell me what's going on with you.
Yeah, man. Well, things are going good, man. Y'all know, I think the last time we talked, I had transitioned up to the that supervisor role. And, you know, man, you just have to be really cautious. And, you know, when you ask God for something, you know, my wife continues to tell me every day I come in and I'm dragging. And I'm like, man, I don't want this no more. I'm ready to go back to Birmingham, blah, blah. She was like, nah, this is what we came here for. You sticking this out. So, but you know what? I think that, you know, one thing I'll say, Dre, and it's tough for me, really, man, because I'll tell you, I'll give you, this sums it up as to what my struggle is at my job. One day we're sitting down with my engineering director in our one-on-one session, and he tells me, he says that I protect my people too much. I'm too protective of them. And he makes the statement that he said, Prentice, you make a great pastor. He said, but your people are not your flock. And I didn't say anything. I just kind of had that, And in my head, though, what I said was, that fundamentally, that's where we disagree on leadership. Because my people are my flock. Because just like my young people at church, you know, my goal, my mission, and what God has called me to do is to instruct, inspire, and encourage. And that's the same thing I'm called to do at work. I instruct, I inspire, and I encourage my people to be better, to do better, to become everything that is that they're to come, just like I do my young people. So so that sums up really my struggles, man, is that I'm really, really now struggling with. I know that, you know, like we said earlier, you know, we all are called into various fields. And I think I have a calling in the professional arena. So God has called me for a task where I'm at. But I am asking God, you know, God, just make sure that I'm mindful of when you say enough is enough, or when you say, you know, the time is done. And don't let me get so caught up in the money and the pay and all that stuff that I'm not willing to follow you and follow the world more in that. So, so man, that's been a struggle, but I had a great opportunity to bring in and have some great people on my team there. And I'll say this, we got about 75 people, and it's a struggle in our organization on our floor, man. It's just a lot of negativity. And I think, you know, to me, one example of the light of Christ in my life is, out of all the teams on the floor, I think, and many others believe, and my team continues to say that, my team is the one team that tends to never really be negative. So I think that's, you know, against his point, you know, that's the thing that I bring that's different, is that, you know, I am dealing in my job with the love of Christ and everything I do, man. And so, you know, I want to have a great environment, man. We have, you know, we have potlucks all the time. You know what I'm saying? We had a potluck breakfast one day, cause I brought in a contractor from New York, and he had never had, grits. I said, well, man, we'll do potluck. We'll make some grits. And, man, one of my guys, his wife, Big Drake, his wife made some gingerbread pancakes. Oh, my God.
Gingerbread cake?
Gingerbread pancakes.
Pancakes?
Gingerbread pancakes. Big Drake, those were amazing. Bro, they were, I can't even describe it, dog. They were awesome. I mean, hands down, they're top two best breakfast, they're best pancakes ever had.
Wow.
They were great, man.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, they were, you remember that time you came down and I made them blue, red velvet pancakes?
Yes.
They were on that level. They were on that. They were to that level. I mean, they were awesome, man. They were awesome. So, like I said, so we just do stuff, man. You know, fun stuff. Try to make sure that here's my message to my people all the time, man. I want to make sure you know I care about you.
Yeah.
I want to make sure you know I care about you. You know, if something's going on in your life, don't be afraid to tell me. We'll manage work. Just know that I care about you.
And
so that's been important for me, man. Like I told you, you know, my oldest now was 14. He's playing varsity. He went freshman in high school. He did have to get benched. He had to get suspended because he wasn't getting them grades up where they need to be.
Yeah.
And so he's struggling right now with that whole high school adjustment thing. But I refuse to let my standards down. You know, I rave about him. He may not be the most, he's a physical specimen. He really has the build to be great if he wants to be. He just whatever. But he's the one thing that I can never take from him. He is, my son is really, really bright. Straight A student all through middle school. Didn't make a B on a report card at all. And, you know, we done hopped off to high school and we got three A's, but then we had a B and a C. I'm like, oh, no, bro. That's not going to work in my house. So we're holding the line. I've told him he can't get back on the football field until he bring those back up to A's. And, you know, I had somebody ask him, said, man, you ain't gonna give it all. I said, it would be different if a B was all he was capable of.
Yeah.
But because he's capable of more, I expect him to perform at what he's capable of. And so you know, that's been a little struggle. And then, like I say, the middle one, Zach is out playing little Pee Wee Pop Warner football, too. And I will go on record and say, I don't care. I'm not running for office here. I hate Pop Warner football. I hate Pop Warner football, man.
Why, man?
I understand why they got stuff like this. So we got weight restrictions. I hate weight restrictions. Because to me, If you never learn how to hit somebody bigger than you, when it comes time to play middle school ball and you ain't got no other choice, you gonna get hurt because you don't know how to do nothing like that. So if you teach kids, I understand, though, they're trying to protect them more. And football's dangerous, but football's always been dangerous, Big Dre. Football didn't just become dangerous. So, I mean, I don't know, man. I really struggle with this. And some of the techniques they got. Say what now?
I said driving a car is dangerous.
I know. And some of the techniques they got me that I have to teach, you know, it's just, it's I don't know, man. It's rough. It's rough.
Well, I will say, like, Pete Carroll has come up with, like, this new tackling system or whatever to, you know, teach players not to lead with their heads and so forth and so forth. And, I mean, all the film I've watched on it, I'm not coaching it. I'm going to coach sound, form tackling, heads up. But, I mean, the way Pete Carroll has, it's, you know, because it's Pete Carroll, people – he's the god of tackling now. No, he's not. And if you try to tackle like this, for one, you'll miss tackles.
Yep.
Two, you're probably gonna pop your shoulder out of place several times.
So is that when the you are head up, elbows back, leading with the top part of your chest?
No. I believe in that. You know,
heads up.
One of the techniques I do is I call bison football. If you're holding a hamburger, you don't bring your head down to the hamburger. You bring the hamburger up to your mouth. So if you bite a football, your head has to be in the up position, meaning you're not leading with your head, and that's going to secure your head. Pete Carroll, you know, a lot, you know, the old school coaches get your head across the ball and so forth. Yeah. You know, which is, to me, you know, as long as your head is up, and that's the big controversy about everything. It's not having your head across the ball and this and that.
It's
having your head
up.
Across the ball is the best thing to ensure a tackle. It's having your head up.
Right.
And one of the ways to teach that is you can't tackle what you can't see. So if your head is down, you're probably going to miss a tackle. And then on top of that, you're probably going to get concussed.
Right.
So, but Pete Carroll teaches, like, instead of having your head across, you have your head on the other side, and you try to, like, wrap up with your arms and then roll. It's very hard to explain.
Oh, that sounds stupid.
It's, to me, it's garbage. And, you know, he has clips of the Seahawks making these plays. Well, first he'll have a clip of somebody in just, you know, shorts and shirt demonstrating this is how it's supposed to go, you attack here, then you kind of roll like this, and that way both players don't get hurt, they don't get their head, blah, 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 blah. But then they show live action film from a game where a player did that same technique.
Uh-huh.
When you watch it, I don't say weak. When I watch it, this is what I think of. I'm like, well, that guy almost missed that tackle. That's the only way he was able to get him down was by doing that.
Doing
and
it
I'm like, he went and said, okay, let me, oh, this is the perfect time that I can put Pete Carroll's tackle drill in and do this. Like, no, you almost missed him.
The rule saved you.
Yeah, you went ahead and grabbed him when you could. So, but because it's Pete Carroll is right.
Yeah.
Well, okay, whatever. Now, if Pete Carroll want to give me a job with the Seahawks, then yes, he will be right.
That's right, and you're going to coach, and you'll coach it.
I'm going to coach the hell out of it.
You'll be a rolling fool.
Yeah, so, what other graphs do you have?
Yeah, so like I said, I don't like that. They got this whole NPR mandatory play rule, so every player has to play 8 plays, which is, you know, I can live with that, Big Dre, because as a coach, I'm not one of those to where, you know, winning is everything. Now, don't get me wrong, I am competitive. I want to always win, but even if a kid may not be as talented as other kids, I want everybody to love and enjoy the game of football. So I'm going to get you in to play. You know what I'm saying? If you want to play, I'm going to let you play. But when I got people, and again, I told you the area I'm in, hold on. Let me back up. Before I even get to the mandatory play, here's the first thing I don't like. right, Big Dre, mm-hmm. we came here from Birmingham. We played Little League football in Birmingham. Tony played Little League football. $150 in Birmingham. You got shoulder pads. You got everything. You got practice pads, game jersey, game pads. Got to keep your game jersey and your game pants. $150, right? Mm-hmm. No, actually, in Birmingham, it was $125, I think. So we come here, and Tony didn't play that because he went to middle school. And so we get ready for Zach this year. And so I look online and say $150. So I was like, okay, cool. That's a little bit more, $25 more. That's all good. I understand that. So I paid $150, and I'm like, yeah, so, you know, what do we pick up pads? They're like, you don't get pads. What? This ain't flag, right? No, it's tackle. So what do you mean I don't get pads? I mean, no, you play in pads, you have to buy them. I got to buy pads. Hmm. Big Drake, you know the only thing we got a game uniform and a pair of socks.
Come on, dog.
A game uniform, so I got a game jersey and a game pair of pants and a pair of socks. That's all I got for $150, bro. $150.
Wow.
That's all I got. I've had to go out, I had to buy helmet, shoulder pads, practice jersey, and on top of cleats. Dude,
yeah, everything.
I spent like $500 for this boy to play football.
Wow.
And at that age, he ain't gonna be able to use the pads next year because he'll be too big. He'll have to have another set of pads.
Yeah.
Dude, so that put the first sour taste in my mouth. You know, and I'm like that. I mean, this is bananas. Yeah. And then, so like I said, we got this mandatory play rule, man. And so you got kids out there whose parents paid their $500, so they want their kids to play. But it's like some of these kids don't want to be out here. Like they don't want to play. I mean, like you know, we had the first game, we got blown out, and we gonna talk about that. We got blown out, and so we got parents coming up, you know, mad. Now, first of all, the mandatory play rule, the person keeping our stats for that, he failed us. It was somebody off the other team. You swapped the mandatory play, and we had a kid. I'll tell you this: that little fat kid never got off the bench, so I know he don't know who went in the game because he never stood up off the bench at all.
Yeah.
And I checked with the second half. He's like, yeah, everybody done played. Dude, you're lying. But whatever. So we couldn't keep up with that. But I got parents coming up to me after the game. You know, after what, they didn't come up to me. Again, I told you the type of area I'm in. I am not the only coach. But you can imagine I'm the only coach that fits my demographic and size. So they did not come to me. But they did go to some of the other coaches and talk about, you know, my son on the play too. Ma'am, we tried to put your son in. He was crying and said he didn't want to play. I mean, what more do you want me to do? Do you really? I mean, how about you go home and have a discussion with your son? Because I'm not putting a kid out there for him to get hurt.
Yeah, who don't want to be out there.
Dude, so, you know, it's and then just the bougie people, man, and I hate it. I hate it. And now we got another coach. He wants to take over the offense, and he done moved us to, we were running a wishbone. A wishbone is very simple to me. A wishbone is simple. You can run a lot of different run plays out of it, but it's designed for you to line up, run the football, teach kids holes, positionings, blocking, all that stuff. You don't have to have very complex plays out of a wishbone, all right? You got 6, 10, 12 running plays. You can run out of wishbone and a couple passes. Well, he wants to go to an I formation with two wide receivers for 7, 8, 9-year-olds. Let me tell you a play, Drake. One of our plays is tight right 48, sweep, bootleg, pass, X, Y, out on –
oh, come on, man.
7, 8, 9-year-olds, Big Drake.
Well, I think the head coach needs a chin check.
I looked. I'm like, no. This ain't the head coach. This is one of the other coaches. So the head coach looks like me as well.
After
the first game, the head coach said, I can't deal with these. I'm going to get fired if I deal with these people like this. I probably should back away a little bit. I like, man, come on, coach. You can't do that, man. I said, both of us came back. He's like, you take care of defense. I'm going to let the other dude take care of offense. I was like, all right.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, dude, that play is too complicated to call in a huddle for 7, 8, 9-year-olds.
Yeah.
This is bananas. You got calls that 7 to 8 words long. Saturday before last, our first game, Big Drake, We played Evans School. Now, I seen Garrett Owens posted on Instagram. He said, I've realized one of the code words. When people say a team has more athletes, what they really mean is they got more black players. Evans had considerably more athletes than we did.
But, you know, I mean, it's true. This is funny. I think I was watching Hard Knocks.
Yeah, the Texans?
Yes, the Texans the other day. And I will say this past January, I joined the American Football Coaches Association or whatever.
But yeah.
Every year they have the big conference where all the college coaches, your Gus Malzahn, your Will Muschamp, Tom Franklin, all these big time college coaches at every university that they're at this thing. And I was shocked at how many. This our show. This the main men show. I'm gonna stop trying to butter it up.
We don't stop sugarcoating. This our show. This our. If you don't want to listen, tune off.
I was real shocked at how many black people were there. And because when you see on TV, all you see is white coaches.
Yeah.
And of course, I was there with my brother and Tulane staff. And what it is you're gonna have your head coaches are gonna be white. Your offensive coordinators are gonna be white. 9 times out of 10, your defensive coordinators are gonna be white, and your quarterback's coach is gonna be white.
Yep.
And more than likely, your offensive lineman coach is going to be white.
Yeah, except for me, I'm just a fat black kid. But
But everything else, from wide receivers, of course, all of your skill positions.
Skill.
Your linebackers, your D-line, everything else is going to be black.
All the positions that require athletes.
Yes. So, of course, I'm watching Hard Knocks, and I'm looking at all the players, and I'm like, it's like the majority of the team is black. And I was sitting here thinking, I'm not going to say it was a silly, but it was just a weird thought that I was just sitting. I kind of drifted off into my own world. And I'm like, I'm wondering why God kind of made us more athletic than our counterparts. Because, I was looking at J.J. Watt. I'm like, that's an athletic dude.
Yes.
He's a freak. Brian Cushion, he's a beast. But if you just look at, like, the linebacker and defensive end position in any level, pros, college, high schools, most of those guys are going to be black.
Yep.
Because in that defensive end, of course I'm biased because that's what I play, but I think your defensive end is like your best athlete because he has to take, he's not a 300-pounder. He's probably a 265, 270 guy. He has to take on 300-pounders, but he got to be able to run like a DB.
To hunt down a quarterback or a running back.
Yeah. And sometimes they leak out in the coverage. So, if you just look at, and I was sitting here thinking like about structure. Like how we're built.
Yeah.
and if we do have a couple races of white people listen, they probably think, yeah, y'all built to pick cotton. And if you say it out loud, I'm chin checking you more than one.
But Detroit, hold on. Because I was just sitting there thinking, like, hold on, did the Lord build us that way, or was it genetics over the years of picking cotton?
Oh, it could have been that too. That field work kind of built us up a little bit. Man, he goes, baby.
The genetics, the evolving of the body said, hey, Lord said, I may need to beef them up a little more.
Yeah, they're going to be doing this the rest of their life.
As you know, we look out for you boys.
Appreciate you.
I'm going to make their back a little wider so they can be able to hold that bag of cotton.
Chest a little broader, legs a little thicker.
Yeah, I'm going to make them a little faster. They're going to outrun that whip the next time. They ain't going to get caught like that. That's why I love having our own show. See, you won't hear this on ESPN.
No, you don't hear. I just had to say it. But, it's just sad that, like, I was watching Real Sports, and George Lopez, Puerto Rican comedian,
yeah,
you know, at the end, they kind of let a comedian or a celebrity kind of talk about a specific sport, and they give kind of like this rundown, and they pretty, because it's on HBO, they pretty much say what they want to say.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, it's pretty cool. George Lopez was talking about baseball, and he was talking about how, you know, there's one black manager, and there's two Puerto Rican or Hispanic managers out the entire baseball league. And if anybody watch any baseball, I mean, Hispanics kind of run baseball.
They
you
do.
Know what I mean? It's kind of their thing.
People of Spanish-speaking descent run baseball.
Yes. And, you know, they showed he made them show a little clip of, I guess it's George Steinberg or
Steinbrenner?
Steinbrenner, yeah. Well, the former owner of the Yankees?
Yeah, George Steinbrenner.
Yeah, and they showed a little clip, and he's, you know, it's probably in the 60s or the 70s, and he's being interviewed, and he's saying, well, I'm assuming because they didn't show the reporter asking the question. They only showed the response. But you can safely assume the reporter maybe asked him, hey, you know, have you thought about hiring a black manager or Puerto Rican manager or whatever?
Yeah.
And his comments were like, well, I just don't think they hold the mental fortitude to run something at this level and to be able to manage a team and this and that. That's just saying that, you know, minorities are stupid.
Yeah.
And, you know, George Lopez just went off so we can play the sport, be better at the sport. And then he went on and showed, like, all the black and Hispanic coaches that are hitting coaches, first base coaches, catcher coaches, outfield coaches, and all these different positions, but the managers were white. And that's the same thing we have in football, especially college football. The head, the coordinators, they're going to be white. Everybody else is going to be black. And my thing is, like this past season with the Chiefs, the head coach and I would butt heads sometimes because he's never played ball. I will give him. He knows X's and O's. But there comes a time when you got to throw X's and O's out the window and listen to a person who's played ball.
So it comes a gut check time.
Yeah, so we're in practice. He's saying, so I told the defensive end, hey, next time you see that play, you need to do X, Y, Z. He does it, makes the tackle in the backfield. He said, no, Drake, I don't want that guy doing that. He got to do this and do that. And I'm like, Coach, that's not right. Well, no, because such and such and such and such. And I'm like, no, that's not right because of such and such and such and such. If he does it like this, every time, he'll make the tackle in the backfield. No. I say, okay, I'm going to play defensive end. Let's just walk through it, and I'm going to show you what technique I'm showing you. And after I showed him, he said, okay, Coach, next play.
Thanks for the education. Let's keep going.
Yeah. Not that, okay, you were right. Well, I never thought of it that. You know, he was done with it then. Of course, it was going to get done the way I explained. And I'm not one of those type of people that can't humble myself or listen to direction, but, you know, he's talking about a position I played, and you was 5'6", 100 or something pounds, you're not going to tell me about defensive end. And not having, I mean, especially when you're saying that they should do this, and it's totally wrong.
Right.
But, and that's the problem. I know I'm jumping all over the place. Listeners, friends, Kingpin, forgive me.
It's all good. It's our show. It don't matter.
But that makes me jump to, I was having a discussion with somebody, I can't recall who it was, but this about the attrition that happens with football and head coaches and, you know, of course I love my Auburn Tigers, but Gus Malzahn messed it up for a lot of people by going to the national championship in his first year.
Yep.
Because, of course, everybody thinks they have talent.
That says expectations.
Everybody thinks, well, I got the talent, I just ain't got the right coach.
Yep.
And I've run into plenty of Georgia fans that want Mark Richt out of there, and I'm like, be careful what you wish for, because this guy's in the hunt every year. People want Les Miles out of LSU. This is the winningest coach in LSU history. Be careful with what you wish for.
Right.
Because Tennessee got rid of former.
And they ain't been the same since.
And this year, with the space alien they got at quarterback, it's supposed to be the year they finally met. But how many years has it been?
It's been literally 10.
It's been about 15 years.
Yeah, it has. Yeah, they let Farmer go in, what, 98, 99?
Yeah. So be careful about what you wish for. And my point of saying all that is, going back to my coach, and what I think is happening in college football, and it's definitely happening in the pros, you have guys, because football is a business, I get it, but you have non-football guys making football decisions. So you have somebody that's a suit who pretty much are number crunchers. Either they're accountants or they're analysts who say, well, percentage-wise, this guy's going to do this, or I feel it. And it's like you Todd McShays and your Mel Kiper. What makes them the doggone experts in college football?
Right.
Because
you know how we hate this.
Blaine Gabbert was the savior of football, and Cam Newton was going to be packing lunch.
Garbage. Cam Newton should be busting tables by now, according to them.
Yeah. Or Russell Wilson, he was going to get a lot of balls batted down because of his height.
Yep.
I mean, so you mean to tell me you just get a spreadsheet, look at somebody's
height and weight.
Yeah, height, weight, the size of the he's going to be this. I mean, I'm getting upset just thinking about it. It really, them two guys, like, if I see them, I'm going to jail that day. So maybe y'all have to post my bail.
Because
I can't stand them, dude. And they just act like they're the end all of college football and projecting which players should go at which part in the pros. But these are the same guys that you have at a GM of professional teams, and when a coach may not have the best year, they're a consistent winner. Oh, you're not getting it done because we need to win now. We're going to get you out of here. Okay.
I got a stat that backs you up. All right, so I was reading this article as you're talking, and it's talking about how the position has increased black head coaches in college football from 4% a decade ago to 10% now. But do you know there has only been one African American head coach that has been fired from one Division I football team and got a head coaching job at another one? The only person ever was Tyrone Willingham. Fired at one major college program and be hired at another one. Can you count how many times this happened for white coaches?
And get a better job.
That's right. Hey, like, take Fat Man Scoop, for instance.
So what?
Take Fat Man Scoop that replaced Tyrone Willingham at Notre Dame.
How'd you take that team? The first year, you were successful because you had his players. So the next year after that, you literally run that program in the ground.
Yep.
Get fired. Kansas, which is a smaller school compared to Notre Dame, football-wise.
Yep.
You know, they're a basketball school.
Yep.
They're like, okay, well, we can get us a good coach. Make you, like, at that particular time, the highest-paying college coach in at the time. You dog, I mean, you so big that you got to sit on the cooler to coach your guys. You run that program on the ground. You so horrible that they owe you like $6 million. They just say, dude, we'll pay you if you just stay your butt at the house. We don't want you around here anymore.
He's still getting two checks from two colleges.
Is it not three? Did Florida, this Florida
yep, still pay I'm sorry. Two? He getting checked from three colleges.
Yeah. You know, so Will Muschamp, like, okay, he's probably not going to be a head coach, so we'll go ahead on and hire him, let him do his thing on the coordinator. Well, he run that in the ground, and we're like, okay, your butt got to go. So we have this guy, and this is a shout out to the Humidor, Jeffrey. He always, you know, Jeffrey's my buddy, he's my friend, and just like Kingpin, he always encouraged me, he supports me in my football thing. And every time I go over there and, you know, we have dinner or whatever as a family, and he prays, he always says, Lord, please give Quay to that Lane Kiffin favor. How does Lane Kiffin, at every head coaching job he has, he gets fired, but he's getting great jobs? And you know, maybe next year, maybe one more season at Alabama, he's going to have another head coach.
He'll be a head coach somewhere.
That's not next year.
If Vanderbilt fire their coach, he may get that gig.
Oh, that dude's fired.
Oh yeah.
Derek Mason is gone.
No, dude, you know what?
And I hate to see it.
You know where he's gonna be at, Big Drake?
Here,
and Lane Kiffin gonna be one of the finalists for the Texas job next year.
Yeah, because they own Charlie Strong.
Charlie Strong. Ain't no turning back for Charlie. Charlie might as well go on and do it this year. It's a wrap for Charlie.
The problem, it's only Charlie's,
Second year.
I think he needs some time because when he went to Louisville was garbage. And, it took him some time. He turned Louisville around.
Charlie gone.
Yeah. That's the way they, unfortunately, they do black coaches. So, you do well out of school. He didn't, in his first year, he didn't turn Louisville around. It took him a couple years, but he was successful. So they hired him thinking it's going to be an immediate turnaround. And because we don't do it immediately, they want to get rid of us and just throw us away. Kind of like they did Ty Willingham, but Ty Willingham was winning.
Yeah,
I know you hate Notre Dame.
I hate Notre Dame. Every football pickums I got, I refuse to pick Notre Dame. I don't care if Notre Dame is playing with Tumka Tech. I'm still going to pick with Tumka Tech. I hate Notre Dame. And my hatred stems from that incident alone.
Yeah.
I mean, it was the worst display ever that you fired a coach that did not have a losing record. Did not. I don't think Ty had a losing season at Notre Dame. I'm going to look it up as we're talking. I don't think he even had a losing season. His worst season was like 7-6.
Yeah, and see, he felt cursed to the immediate success. I don't know if it was his first year or second year.
First year, he went
10-1 or 10-2.
Yeah.
So, this is going to be like this every year. I mean, my brother always say when he's watching film, and one of the coaches would be like, your guy's getting whipped. Your guy's doing this. Why isn't he doing that? And his response is like, okay, that guy that he's going against, he on scholarship too. He ain't nobody that just decided, I think I'm going to play football today. So we got to realize, what Nick Saban has done has been pretty remarkable.
It has.
Because it is hard to win. That's just like, last year, when they won with 14-13 or whatever it was against Arkansas, I don't know if you remember, but he went on like a little rant. He like,
we're not gonna win everything every time.
Yeah, these fans need to check themselves. Yes, Arkansas record is not good, but this is still a quality SEC opponent, and we should be happy we won. We didn't win by as many points, and we should be happy we won. These other 11 players across the ball, they're on scholarship too to play college ball.
That's right.
You know what I mean?
That's right. I agree, man. It's disappointing. Like I said, it's a double standard. Let me get Ty's stats. Ty went 10-3, then he went 5-7, so he did have a losing season. Then he went 6-5. And then they fired him before the bowl game. So he got three seasons, one of them was a 10-3 season. And then they fired him. And Ty got fired again. Well, Ty has sucked since then.
After that, he kind of went down. Did he go to Washington State or Washington?
Ty went to
like
Washington.
That?
I didn't know he went 0-12. Golly, Ty.
Ooh, I didn't know that either. Ooh. But you know what Ty doing? Now Ty is on that bowl committee, that playoff committee or whatever.
Oh, is he on the committee now?
Yeah, he was one of the original members on the committee.
One of the 13 members. He sure was. Oh, he getting paid handsomely for that. He is officially retired from coaching. He said he don't coach no more. So,
that's just like John Gruden. Everybody get their hopes up. Pretty much for a while.
Every year.
Tennessee thought he was coming. You know how stressful coaching is?
Right.
And you got to win? I get to just sit up here. I get to watch football nonstop. I get to go on my man cave. I get to watch all the football film I can watch because it's
a part of my job. It's a job.
It's a part of my job. I got to break this. I got to do this analytic stuff. And I'm not going to get fired? Man, please. I'm tired good.
I get paid just as much as I did when I coached, if not more. Man, ain't nobody coming out.
With no stress? I mean, it was stressful.
In that same report, though, shows, you know, I said we're at 10% coaching. It said that African-Americans make up, I think it said 13% of the population, but we make up 48.5%, 43.5% of the student-athletes.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know.
And it would be higher than that, but BYU ain't got no black players.
That's right. There's a few places out there that got none.
Yeah, there's several schools that don't have no black players.
But then you got places like Tulane that's got all blacks too.
Yeah.
But I will say this, and I hope one day we can get Quan on the show, because I got that. Well, he can't tell me on even on the show. His head coach, when watching the game from, because I watched their game the other night. While watching them, his head coach looked like he should not be the head coach. To me. He just looked like I don't know, like somebody's uncle from the stand on the corner. Like, hey, buddy, I don't know nothing about that football now. I tell you what, if you run down there, I bet I can get you.
Well, I'm going to say this. This is one time where I ain't going to bite my tongue.
You need to.
Okay. My first coaching opportunity could possibly be at Tulane. So, pick up to Curtis Johnson. I love you, boy.
Comments.
I appreciate everything you've done for me.
Those were not comments on the Made Men Radio Show. Those were comments of Prentice Kingpin on the Made Men Radio Show.
Yeah, those comments are made by Kingpin and Kingpin alone.
The comments just made were those of Kingpin and Kingpin only.
Yeah, so,
but it's funny. I was watching just to catch a glimpse of Big Quan on the sideline, man. So, big shout out to you, Big Quan, out there doing his thing.
Yeah, and his defensive line played well.
Yeah, they did.
Offense got to score points. Offense eventually got to score, got to stop turning the ball over. And in the fourth quarter, they had a small window of a shot when they scored. And then when they kicked it off, old Bunny ran that thing all the way back.
It's a wrap.
They kind of did it right there.
Yep, that's a wrap. Took their heart out. Yeah, took that heart out. Hey, Big Drake, man, we're gonna take a break, man, come back. Folks, I tell you, so we gave y'all the first segment just to get back to, you know, just to get y'all up to speed of what's been going on in our lives. We come back, you know what we gonna do. You already know. We're gonna give you nothing but that unadulterated football, baby. We got plenty of stuff, man, we'll talk about. We're gonna talk about college football has kicked off last week. We're gonna talk about what we thought about those Auburn Tigers. And I have some comments. I got some stuff to say about my team right now. We're gonna have to talk a little bit about what looked like. I'll tell you this. I'll give this preview for my comments. What I seen on the field from Ohio State reminded me of that 2003 USC team.
Yeah, they just loaded, man. They really are.
It was reminiscent of that team.
They're loaded.
I mean, it's freaking unbelievable the amount of – I don't know. I like to check the record books. Has there ever been a team that had four potential Heisman Trophy candidates on one offense? I mean, because realistically, both quarterbacks could be Heisman Trophy contenders. They won't be because they're on the same team. But both could have the talent to be Heisman Trophy candidates, as well as Ezekiel Elliott, the running back, as well as Braxton Miller playing wide receiver / quarterback.
And Braxton Miller's lost some weight, man.
Yeah, and rocked up.
Yeah, he's lean.
Man, them arms are looking so rocked up, dude. Yeah, yeah.
He looked like he never played quarterback.
That's right,
man. When he got the ball, his first catch, he had to pluck that thing literally off the ground to make it a catch. That was impressive alone. But just his physique and watching how he ran the ball and everything he did as a receiver is like, this can't be like the old quarterback.
Yeah, the old quarterback.
This must be a dude that happens to have the same name. But I was just so shocked by his physique. I went and looked at a picture a couple years ago, and he's lost a lot of weight.
Yeah, he used to be a little fluffy looking.
Yeah,
at quarterback.
You can really tell somebody the weight loss in their face.
That's right.
And if you just do a headshot of his face of then and now, oh man.
He rocked up, man. So we're going to talk about Ohio, a little bit of Ohio State, man. And then, depending upon time, man, we get into a little of this NFL action, too, man. And then we got to talk about the great Serena Williams, man, and her quest for the Grand Slam, man. Hey, guys, it's your boys, man. Kingpin, Big Drake, Made Man Radio Show. We back! So, man, you know how I do. Like I said, I gave you a little old school to tell you. We got to get the people what they want. But you know what we love to play on here, man. I play nothing but that crunk gospel hip-hop, man. So I got a track that I'm going to end this segment with that I really, really, my wife told me about it first, and I ain't care for it. But the more I listen to it, I really like this track. And I think it sums up just how I feel. Man, I love God. It's your boy Kingpin, Big Drake, Made Me Radio Show. Come on back with segment two. Yeah.